Hello and welcome to another episode of the Steal One Put a Podcast. I'm going to do a quick episode today because it's coming up on Thanksgiving as I recorded this, and just wanted to get you just some quick hit valuable things to think about as we go into the waiting game of what's going to happen in Trump's second term with student loans. So I wanted to talk a little bit about PSLF buyback. I want to talk a little bit about what to do when you're really close to forgiveness. Also wanted to talk a little bit more about some of these other repayment plans that may or may not be coming back. And I just wanted to give you a little bit of a hot take on the situation right now. So I'm seeing so many people that are reaching out, particularly PSLF folks, that are like, I have 5 payments left. I am going insane. I was so close. I was going to be done. And now I'm terrified. I've gotten so many messages of that, so many questions from people, so many clients reaching out about this. This is a very real concern, and I'm going to address it head on. Also, there's a lot of folks out there with the IDR account adjustment, maybe they would be in their 30s, 40s, 50s, that actually from that adjustment might be super close to getting private sector loan forgiveness that also might be super scared right now. So we're going to address both scenarios. First, let me address the PSLF buyback scenario, because I think that this one's on a lot of people's mind. So what is PSLF buyback? I recently heard on a competitor's student loan podcast that, you know, the PSLF buyback, you can only apply once you have 120 payments of credit. That is wrong information. That's why you come to the source for student loan expertise. Ha ha ha. The real actual rules of the program are once you have 120 months of total employment credit for PSLF, and that buying back forbearance and deferment periods would get you to 120 months of credit. That is when you need to apply for this. This process is something that, like many things in the Biden administration, they promised it, but made no plan for implementation and gave no direction to the servicers on how to execute it. This is why the process is so messed up. Think about the fact that they made these new rules on PSLF buyback. This was always intended to be a very edge niche case that would affect only a few handful of people. This is not something ever that was supposed to affect 1 million or 2 million borrowers in the PSLF program, but that's where we're at. What is going on? So first of all, know that the save plan forbearance went into effect around mid-June. Pretty much everybody that has been employed consistently at a qualifying employer that's going for PSLF essentially has about 5 or 6 months of credit that they could buy back already. And this is like not just a few people, this is like 1 million+ people. So how do you get credit during this time? Well, under the rules, which of course President Trump could amend if he wanted to through negotiated rulemaking, it wouldn't be a snap of the fingers. It would be a very drawn out process if they wanted to change this, okay? So under the PSLF regulations that went into effect in 2023, what you do with that PSLF buyback is you've got 120 months of credit based off of your employment, and then you apply. You go to the PSLF help tool, you submit an application, you say, I believe that I apply. You go in and you turn in your application, and then it's the waiting game. They probably deny you, and they say, oh, you don't have 120 months of credit. And you're like, well, that's because I'm applying for the PSLF buyback program. And then they're going to probably reject you again. And they're going to say, well, we want you to request this with this language. And then you give them the exact language that they want. And then finally, they review it. And then maybe at some point, months later, they come back with the number that you need to pay to be done. And all during this time, you might say, well, I want to quit my job. I want to take a different job. I want to be done with this. I'm so aggravated by this. I'm so stressed by this. And I totally empathize with your feelings. But there's not an alternative right now in terms of getting all the benefits that you can. Another issue is, we've heard rumors that there is a stop work order from Department of Education where servicers are not even allowed to process IBR applications. That's how bad it is right now, okay? So whenever the Biden administration would publish things, hey, you know, the student loan servicers have a record number of complaints based off their shoddy service. Well, first off, servicers have not gotten a lot of money to do the job from Congress for a long time and have done a lousy job for a long time as a group. So that's not surprising. But when the Biden administration essentially promises the world, spends all of their money trying to accomplish things that get blocked in the courts instead of implement the plans they promised, Congress doesn't issue more money because it's controlled by Republicans to Department of Ed to do the things the Biden administration promised. Whose fault is it? I don't know. Everybody's. But the problem is like everybody wants to point fingers and say, instead of say, how do we fix this? And so what you need to be ready for as a student loan borrower is just a long drawn out process. If you're close to forgiveness, it's very aggravating. Now, the good news is theoretically, with this PS Left buyback works and you eventually overpay beyond the 120 months, you can get all that overpayment back as a refund. So that's something to know, is like, if you can get all that money back as a refund, well, at least there's something positive there, right? So let's say that you went into this forbearance, the save plan forbearance with, let's say you went into it with 112 months of qualifying payments, just to give an example. And let's say the save plan forbearance goes until, I don't know, February or something like that, right? So let's say you've got 7 or 8 months of credit from the save plan forbearance. Finally, they start processing IBR applications again. So you apply for whatever plan you can get on, and then, you know, you end up with 122, 123 months of credit, and you're like, oops, I paid a little too much. Well, let me try to apply and do this PS Left buyback thing. So you'll get denied. They'll give you that number to buy back. Hopefully you can buy back some of that amount, and then hopefully you can be done. Now, why are they opening up the pay in the ICR plans, or wanting to, right? So I got an email from a friend of my spouse's the other day who's sort of like, well, I don't have a partial financial hardship anymore. What do I do? The save plan's blocked, repay's blocked. I have a huge jump in my income, right? How do I even get qualifying payment credit right now? This is like crazy. How do I get credit at all? That's why they were reopening ICR. So it's not because they just like opening plans. The ICR plan is very complicated. What happens is it's the 12-year standard plan multiplied by an income sensitive factor. And this is if you're not getting a payment that looks good, that's 20% of your income. That's the normal formula, 20% of your income. But what happens is there's a cap. And the cap on the payment is the 12-year standard plan times the income sensitive factor based off of where your income's at. So for high income professionals, the income sensitive factor is 2. So you take the payment of a 12-year standard amortization and multiply by 2. So it works out to a 6-year standard plan. Now you might say, well, like, why would I ever sign up for the ICR plan? It's a great plan if that's your only choice. If that's your only option, it's a lifeline. It's a way to get a qualifying credit to be made. For somebody who's on the standard plan, and this is nutso, but it's amortized according to how much time in repayment that you have left, with a maximum of 10 years. So if you have been in repayment for 9 years, your standard plan payment theoretically would be amortized over a single year. I mean, it's just crazy. The standard 10-year plan, I believe, if my memory recalls me right, back in 2017 and 18, I don't think the servicers were actually doing the regulations the way they were written. I think they were just doing the standard 10-year amortization and not worrying about amortizing it over the remaining payment length. But with the regulations written as the way they are, technically that standard 10-year plan is supposed to be amortized according to how much time you have left minus, you know, 10 years minus the time you've been in repayment. And that's why people are getting these shockingly high monthly payments. That's what's going on with the servicers. That's why they're sending out people's bills that are like, you have to pay $8,000 a month if you don't certify. That's the reason. Now, if you consolidate, there's a different standard plan. It's the standard 30-year plan. And that one does not count for PSLF, but it's not amortized in a short format like the standard 10-year plan is. So this is, you know, it's totally nutso. Totally nutso. Let's say you're not PSLF. Let's say you're doing private sector forgiveness, but let's say you've got a ton of credit from the IDR account adjustment. And let's say you're really, really close to being done with the 20 or 25 year forgiveness option. So the thing that I'd be concerned about right now is that if the courts say you can't get any forgiveness under the ICR statute, because then your only option is to go through something like income-based repayment. And so that's what we're monitoring. That's what we have to just monitor and watch closely. The other issue with private sector forgiveness is the expiring Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in the end of 2025, that the tax-free, actually, technically, this is part of the American Rescue Plan, but the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act expires at the same time. So both of these bills expire at the end of 2025, and the party in power is going to be the Republicans. They're going to have the House, Senate, and the White House. And so through budget reconciliation, you can completely rewrite the tax code to your liking. So that means that Republicans, and only Republicans, will control whether or not there's an extension of tax-free student loan forgiveness. And to be honest, I have no idea how this is going to shake out. There's a chance that maybe they trade that for some other things that they want, but they don't also kind of don't need to, unless they can't get the votes in the House, because the House's majority and for the Republican majority is so narrow. That's just something that we're going to have to kind of watch really closely. In terms of these plans reopening, I mean, I do think that there's tons of pressure right now on the Biden administration from consumer advocate groups, and I see them posting on Twitter all the time. They're like, 50 days left. What is Biden doing for student loan borrowers? Why is he not working? Why is his team not working? I think that the human answer to this is a lot of people that work at Department of Ed can't afford to just work for nothing and have to have jobs and have to have jobs that pay livable salaries for their families. And so what I think is happening is a lot of the folks that could process this stuff, especially certain like higher mid-level or higher level than that employees at Department of Ed, are frankly looking for jobs, right? And some of them are leaving and getting new jobs. And so a lot of those folks, they have the holidays, they have this very short compressed time window, but they know they're going to be completely out of work in some cases by January 30th when the new administration takes over. And I'm talking more about the political appointees, really, more so than the career staff, which is much larger. But at the same time, there could be career staff that is worried and might be looking for other jobs as well. So you've got Department of Ed that's sort of really running around like a chicken with its head cut off, having no idea what they want to do or how they can accomplish it. And I think that was really fascinating, Ezra Klein podcast, if anybody listens to that, about the failures of the Biden administration and the successes. But I mean, they talked specifically about the big progressive promises, right? That, you know, well, Biden could be the second coming of FDR. We could have a second New Deal, like that we would have this amazing, you know, litany of policy accomplishments that would come out of ideas from Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Elizabeth Warren. Biden really did put a ton of their people in at Department of Ed. But in the Ezra Klein podcast, they talk about, well, the spectacular failure of what Biden's policies did is implementation. They effectively had all of these big bills, right, with big, large amounts of money being thrown around and things that they were going to do for people. But there was no plan for follow-up. There was no plan on implementing things. There was no plan on how do you actually accomplish the things that they said that they were going to do. And when there's no implementation plan, you can throw a bunch of money at a problem. But if you actually don't have a plan on execution, then all you've done is just throw a bunch of money at a problem with no plan. And I think that in some ways, if you're going to make a balanced assessment of the Biden administration's record on student loans, it's unambiguously by far the most generous that a presidency has ever been towards student loan borrowers by a long shot. $157 billion, I think, canceled. Maybe it's up to more than that now. I mean, that's an absolutely a massive amount. And that's not counting the cancellation that was blocked by Republican state officials in the courts, right? So if you think about what he actually accomplished, it was enormous. Now, some of that would have happened anyway because the PS Love program, the way it was designed, was intentionally defective. So the CBO cost for the people who are writing it would be low enough that it wouldn't raise any eyeballs. But that's a technical conversation. The theme is still true that Biden's done more for student loan borrowers than anybody in terms of the costs and relief that he got people. But the problem is he's also, in getting that relief, has also created the worst mess imaginable at Department of Ed for the future, because you promised all these things with the IDR account adjustment with no implementation plan. You promised all these things with new IDR and PSLF regulations when Department of Ed can barely breathe. The SAVE plan was failed in implementation because the government's own provider of services and payment calculations was not able to calculate with the Biden administration's own SAVE plan formula what people would actually have to pay each month, because the formula was so complicated, they were not able to calculate what the payments of borrowers should be, and thus they weren't able to send the billing notices out on time, and thus the SAVE plan payments did not go out, and nobody made those payments based off of undergrad debt percentages that they had. And I think that that was one of the things that tripped up the program. I think it would have been blocked anyway, but that's certainly one of the things that tripped up the program from being successfully implemented, was because the Department of Ed couldn't even figure out their head from their, you know, behind, let's say. Will Trump's Department of Ed be better for borrowers? I mean, I think that answer is an obvious no in terms of the relief that borrowers will get. But the only hope that I think we can have is that long-term implementation of all of these programs gets better, and that it's not such a disaster on the actual like procedural front. If you look at other government agencies, this is kind of a little bit par for the course. The IRS supposedly got $80 billion to modernize, to hire new people, to do a more effective job, right? And you know what happened is I got tons of notices from the IRS for like 2-3 years in the past on tax returns that they were behind on. And a lot of it was just like, well, they like misapplied payments that I made to the wrong tax year, and that caused all these like reporting problems, and I had to fix the error and have them move credits around to the right tax year to avoid penalties and interest and stuff. And this was just creaky government systems that are just not set up for the modern age. You can set up an online account with the IRS portal for an individual, but for a business, you still have to rely on important notices coming to you via snail mail. And, you know, hopefully you see them if you get them. So student loan servicing, I think, is kind of no different. It's a creaky government system that was made from political incentives to try to keep costs low, to try to dodge legislative hurdles to do things, right? And as a result, you get this just chaotic mess of a system. But all hope is not lost. You can still save a bunch of money. Right now, if you're on the SAVE plan of forbearance, I would just be patient. I would just wait. They're not processing IBR applications anyway at the moment. I'll let you know the second that changes. But when they start processing applications again, that's when you'd be able to functionally switch. If you're on a different plan, like the pay plan or the IBR plan, stick with the payments. Keep making those payments. Don't lose hope. And know that IBR forgiveness is statutory. It's in the law. Most people that have their first loan after 2014 are basically getting the pay plan, but through IBR, which is very, very generous. And if you have your first loan from before that date, if we have a very negative court ruling that does not get changed on any level from appeals courts or the Supreme Court, then we'll have to decide based on the new rules. Should the highest income folks consider paying their loans off, and the moderate to lower income folks will still go for forgiveness, it just might be slightly less generous. And just to let you guys know about another reason why I'm not super worried about student loans long term for folks that are trying to get benefits, get forgiveness, et cetera. There was a new bill recently proposed. I think it's called the Affordable College Act or something, by a Republican congressperson that essentially wants to reset all those student loan interest rates to 1% or something like that. I mean, so if you think about the fact that Republicans are the ones proposing no interest accrual, no negative interest accrual with College Cost Reduction Act, which is also something that makes matching payments to principal. And we've got Republicans proposing 1% student loan interest rates and stuff. I don't necessarily think that those are going to go anywhere because of just the lack of bipartisan consensus on student loans. But there's clearly a sort of very different Republican Party that's in place today than was in place in 2017 when you had Paul Ryan in control. There was more traditional fiscal conservatives. These folks are not like that. I think they're very much not in love with like the higher educated group of voters in terms of like wanting to do policy priorities that prioritize that group of folks, because obviously the base of this new Republican Party is the white working class and increasingly the non-white working class, right? And then the Democratic base is a lot more of like higher educated folks. And that's just a really interesting difference and change in the political environment that we've seen fairly recently during this Trump era that we've been in politics. What I'm saying is you still see this like Republican Party being more progressive on random issues in terms of what they want to spend money on, which is kind of unexpected. So what I would predict is more of the unexpected with student loans. And we're going to monitor this. We're going to watch closely. We're going to let you know when you can take action, how you would take action and what to do. But for now, if you're very close to forgiveness, if you're doing PSLF buyback, just be ready to pounce when you have 120 qualifying months of employment and apply for it. And include this SAVE plan forbearance in your account. And then when you apply and get rejected, then you want to be pushing them for what is my number that I need to do the lump sum to be done. And then if you're, you know, private sector forgiveness, hopefully you're going to get done before the end of 2025. If you're not, because you're really close, then just we have to wait and see with what will happen with the rewrite of the tax code that's expected to happen in 2025. So if you have any questions about any of this, we'd love to hear the questions. Go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and record your question, and we'll feature you on a future episode of the Student Loan Planner podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week.